What's that sound? That's the sound of Downy Unstoppable scent beads going into your washing machine and giving your clothes freshness that lasts all day long. There it is again. It's like music to your ears, or more like music to your nose. That freshness is irresistible. Let's get a Downy Unstoppables bottle shake. And now a sniff solo. Nice. Get 6 times longer lasting freshness plus odor protection with Downy Unstoppables in wash scent beads.
They'll throw it. Richardson given time. Floating for the back of the end zone, and Alec Pierce, touchdown Colts. He was wide open, and Indy finally finds the end zone.
That's from Fox. Finally finds the end zone. Words you don't usually want to hear. J.J. Stankovitz is on Twitter at J.J. Stankovitz, Colts.com writer, Colts Stadium PA announcer. How about that? With us on the Circus Sports Illinois Hotline. Download the Circus Sports app today. Twitch.tv/Chicago670theScore. How are you, J.J.? What's up?
I'm great. Good to be back on the airwaves in Chicago.
J.J., I need to understand your job because I that's a lot. As it was described to us. So you are the PA announcer, but you're also writing about the Colts after the game. Is that how yes. a game day works? And how can you keep the functions of those two jobs separate? Because PA announcer at an NFL game is high stakes, very important, and so is your other job.
So I lean on, I have an intern. She's great. Her name is Amanda Foster. She does a fantastic job writing articles. She'll write kind of the immediate gamer for Colts.com, handle any news that pops up during the game. And then, you know, because I do cover the team, I am here every day during the week. You know, I know the storylines going into the game. I have a general idea of what to look for. But, I mean, yeah, like I'm not like charting the game the way that I'll do when I go on the road and cover road games. So I rely a lot on Amanda. I rely a lot on the other folks who are up in the PA booth with me. Who will kind of throw me some notes here and there of just like, hey, jot this down. Usually during halftime, I'll have a minute or two to go check on the box score, just see what trends are going on. But it's definitely a different way to cover a game. But ultimately, once the game ends, I'm right back to being the team writer. I go down the locker room, you go to press conferences and, you know, resume that job. But there is about a 4-hour gap on game day where I'm the PA announcer.
Oh. JJ, we began the week assessing what the Bears themselves were saying about their now 2 weeks of lackluster offensive performance and what it says about how good they are relative to how good they thought they might be coming out of camp. How would the Colts fare in that regard? Do they think they're significantly better than they've shown?
Yes, but that comes with the acknowledgement that you give up 474 rushing yards over the first 2 games of a season. And, you know, Zaire Franklin has kind of, you know, made this point, like we can talk about how we're better than 0-2, but ultimately we're an 0-2 football team. So that's what we are. This team believes they are better though than 0-2. Like there's a lot of talent. There's a lot of returning guys. They believe in their coach. There's not, you know, you don't get a sense of a splintering locker room right now or anything like that. But really, this team, there are 2 main things this team needs to address that I think are issues you weren't necessarily expecting coming into the year. The number one thing I just mentioned, it's the run defense. That was supposed to be a strength of this team. They've allowed more rushing yards in the first 2 games of the season than any team since the 1970s. And now they're going to have to fix that run defense without DeForest Buckner, who went on injured reserve this week. The flip side of that, the Colts have only possessed the ball for 39 minutes and 49 seconds. So this is a team that hasn't just had the ball that much. They've hit a lot of explosive plays, but they've had a number of drives that have just petered out after 3 or 4 plays that have led to a punt, a turnover. Those need to be corrected. The Colts need to have longer drives, just have the ball more. That will help the offense out, obviously, in scoring points, but it also will help the defense and just get them off the field for a little longer. So those 2 things, I don't think were expected, but they are things that early in the season absolutely have to be corrected.
And JJ, as you're probably very much aware of, the Bears have not been able to run the football. So I said earlier, this is the battle between the movable force and the stoppable object, if you will. Have the things you've seen going to practice every day kind of led you to believe that the corrections are headed in the right direction, and what you've heard and what's gone wrong in the first two games as far as stopping the run?
Yeah, the Colts, it's not even necessarily in practice, but against Green Bay, they got shredded in the first three drives of that game. Josh Jacobs ran for over 100 yards. It was ugly. And it only wasn't a 17-0 game because Zaire Franklin forced a fumble at the goal line. But in the next seven drives of that game, the final seven drives, Green Bay went from averaging 6.7 yards per rush to 2.4 yards per rush. So they made a switch. Gus Bradley made it, kind of intimated to us this week that the Colts went to, from matching 11 personnel with nickel, they started playing base to Green Bay's 11. So they got a third linebacker on the field, took the fifth DB off, and that led to some improved play. The key again, though, can you do that? Can you play base to 11 consistently going forward and risk having Jalen Carlisle, a rookie linebacker who's kind of the third linebacker, risk him having to cover a wide receiver? Or do you drop a safety down? There are different things you can do there. And again, you have to do it without DeForest Buckner. So it's a big challenge for this run defense. They all know, by the way, that if they can't stop the run against Chicago and you let Caleb Williams ease his way into this game, no matter what Caleb has shown, whatever unevenness he's shown in the first two games, they know how talented he is. They know how good of a processor he is. And this team knows that if they let Caleb Williams settle into this game, it's going to be a tough afternoon in Indianapolis.
The comparing and contrasting of sort of team psychology.
Right.
This is endlessly fascinating. And you're dealing there with something Bears fans are dealing with here once again, and that is trying to balance a quarterback's development, trying to make sure that the ball is safe while also making sure that a special talent can make magic. Now, Anthony Richardson has been on the wrong side of that equation so far this year, despite the one astonishing highlight that we already know for sure is going to be one of the touchdown passes of the year already that we saw. But he's not protecting the football. What's their philosophy with making sure he can be special while also being safe?
Well, I'll give Anthony this credit. That was the first multi-interception game he had in his career in week two against Green Bay. That's not something that's been a problem for him. It's not something that's even been a problem during training camp practices. Like, you know, going back to, you know, remember like some of those practices when I was covering the Bears where it's like, you know, Mike Glennon threw a couple picks in this practice. Like you're kind of, you know, grabbing the side of your chair going, I don't know how this is going to go. We haven't seen that with Anthony. And the pockets have been really good. This offensive line is one of the best, if not the best in the NFL. So he's staying upright. He's got a good feel for pressure. It's more a matter of like, he is going to have just some inconsistencies because he's only started 19 games since high school, six in the NFL. The Colts know that. They were prepared for this going in, that he might have a game where, yeah, he throws two picks and one, you know, both of them, you're sort of left scratching your head. Is that on him? Is that on the receiver? Is that on everyone? Like what it may be. But there's not any worry about what Anthony Richardson's doing in terms of protecting the ball. For the most part, you know, Shane Steichen has said he's making good decisions. His eyes are going where Shane's eyes are going on a play, which is always a good sign when you have the quarterback and coach on the same page. And there's a lot of confidence that while there are going to be highs and lows this season, the highs will ultimately outweigh the lows. Even if so far through two games, you might look at the lows and say, that's been, you know, a reason why the Colts are 0-2. Week one was not on Anthony Richardson. That loss to Houston was not on Anthony Richardson. He played a really good game. It was the run defense that let the Colts down.
Looking forward, I guess, and Anthony Richardson, I see a guy who's shown the potential to be dual threat. I know he had six carries for 56 yards last week and a touchdown rushing the football. How much of that is by design and his deliberation on whether to take off or stay in the pocket and try to climb the pocket as far as looking at what the Bears bring to the table with their pass defense and their ability to rush the quarterback?
Yeah, Anthony's not a scramble to, or he's not a guy who looks to scramble when he gets outside the pocket. He's really good at keeping his eyes downfield and still processing what is ahead of him. He's not just going to, okay, I'm outside the pocket. I don't trust anything, so I'm going to go take off. He's not that kind of a quarterback. When he escapes pressure, he's still looking to make a big play downfield. The Colts, I think, are going to ease their way into more designed runs for him. You know, that hasn't been a huge staple of this offense yet, But I think as you start seeing this offense develop a certain identity as the season goes on, you'll see more of that. I think it's going to be interesting in this game where obviously Matt Eberflus is going to play a lot of zone. That's not an easy defense to scramble and get a lot of chunk yards on scrambles against. But those Bears defenders are going to have to stay disciplined, whether you're in your rush lanes or on your assignment in zone, because if you...
Did we lose JJ?
He's going to try to beat you.
Okay. I think you dropped out of the very end of that answer there, JJ.
Yeah, it's more, Dan, it's more just about the Eberflus defense probably not being conducive to Richardson scrambling, but it being where that's going to have to be a very disciplined defense because Anthony's always looking for a big play when he gets outside the pocket. Mm.
What is their level of desire to blitz? Because that's something that we've noted where D'Amico Ryan's going into that game. We know that they're a pretty blitz-reluctant team, but they didn't waste any time sending extras to make this confused Bears offensive line into the Keystone Cops. Is this also something we're going to see?
Gus Bradley does not blitz very much, but he will turn the dial up if the game plan calls for it. Last year in week three against Baltimore, the Colts blitzed, I think, 20-something times against Lamar Jackson. Mm. When I looked it up, that was the most Gus Bradley had blitzed since like 2016 with the Jaguars. Like, it had been a real long time since he did that, but that to me showed some growth in Gus Bradley that, hey, the game plan calls for it. We got to do it. None of it matters, though. It won't matter if the Colts blitz if they can't stop the run. Like, I'm going to sound like a broken record here, but they got to stop the run. You cannot let DeAndre Swift and Khalil Herbert and Rashawn Johnson get going in this game. Because, again, like you mentioned, those guys have not had much success on the ground this year. The Colts cannot let that happen. If they do, it's not going to matter if they're sending five, they're sending six. They're going to have a tough time on defense.
We have heard this stat repeatedly this week about teams 0-2 winning, 70% of their games in that third game. And this is obviously fits the bill for that for the Colts. You said they weren't panicked and they seem like they're in control. I mean, what is the sense that you get? It's interesting because Jonathan Taylor's like that guy from just a few years ago trying to get paid and considered one of the top backs in the NFL. He said it's not just on Anthony Richardson to get this done.
Yeah, I mean, the starting point for why I think this team's just not even close to the panic button is there are guys who were in this locker room in 2018 when the Colts started off 1-5 and they made the playoffs. In 2021, the Colts started off 0-3 and they should have made the playoffs that year had they not, completely melted down in week 18 against Jacksonville. So there's a lot of confidence that, hey, look, there's a lot of season left. There's a lot of veterans in this room who can support Anthony Richardson, like you mentioned, and not put all the pressure on their 22-year-old quarterback, who, by the way, is still the youngest starting quarterback in the NFL for the second straight year. So it's a good mentality. And I think then also just coming from the top with Shane Steichen, where you never sense like a wavering in confidence with him. Like, I've been a part of, you know, press conferences with coaches where you can kind of sense like, they're grasping for answers. They're grasping at straws. And you never get that sense with Shane Steichen that he's at that point, that he's anything but like, no, we're going to get this fixed. And like, that's not just like a reflexive coach speak. It's like, no, we're going to get this fixed. And I know exactly how we're going to get it fixed.
You believe him?
I do. He's shown me no reason to not believe him. I mean, look, last year, Anthony Richardson goes down in week five. You're thinking, all right, well, there goes the season. He squeezes every drop he can out of Gardner Minshew and almost gets the Colts to the playoffs. The Colts are one drop pass on 4th-and-1 away from probably being AFC South champions last year. So, and that was with a backup quarterback. You had some offensive linemen coming in and out. You never really got Jonathan Taylor going. He was banged up later in the year. He's a good coach for whatever is presented in front of him. So absolutely, I do believe him.
What type of atmosphere do you expect for this game? I know fans tend to panic before anybody else does. I can tell you that just we're talking about a 1-1 team here in Chicago, and the sky is falling for some people because the offense has looked that bad. What do you think the atmosphere is going to be like in a dome in Indianapolis come Sunday?
Lucas Oil Stadium is a tough place to play, man. Like, it is... It's loud in there. These are really good fans that we have, even if the team's 0-2. And I think if the Colts get off to a fast start, it's going to be real tough on Caleb Williams, like real tough in that building. I know we're going to have a lot of Bears fans coming down to our house, but like Colts fans are going to show up. I have no doubt they're going to be loud. I really don't have to do much. I could, you know, just be like, it's third down, and everyone will, you know, cheer and yell. So I think it, as long as the Colts get off to a fast start, go down, get a touchdown on the first drive, you know, get a stop on the Bears' first drive, that'll be kind of this cascading effect that should make it a pretty tough atmosphere for the Bears to come into.
JJ, thanks so much. Enjoy your weekend and all your various jobs.
All right. Thanks, guys. You're the best.
That is JJ Stankovitz, Colts.com writer and Colts Stadium PA announcer this hour.
That's wild to me.
Brought to you by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Save on dental implants today. I still don't know how he does it. That's amazing.
His explanation made sense on paper, but like it just seemed like it'd be helter-skelter. Like you don't see something that you like. That conversation between walking downstairs with your intern and understanding, make sure you're not missing anything before you go ask questions. That's got to be intense.
He is Marshall Harris, the guy with the cool t-shirts. I'm Dan Bernstein. Although nothing against Chicago.
I like your
Fretworks,
t-shirt.
My guys. Those are my dudes.
Yeah,
Square.
I like your t-shirt.
Thank you. I have a couple of them. They're just old and they get all pilled and my wife tries to throw things out and I have to rescue them and save them. And
how often does she try to throw, like how many times is she trying to throw out like a specific item that you just want?
Usually
to let go?
It's like I have socks that where like there's no heel on the socks.
Why do you have that?
Because those are my heelless socks.
This is like the pants you were talking about.
My assless pants. Yes.
Let's get rid of that, Dan.
Didn't you say also that there's an underwear thing that your wife tries to throw some underwear out?
Oh, that's multiple pairs of what she says have technically ceased to be underwear. They're a waistband.
Why are you wearing that?
Because they're mine. And and you know what? And I had this true story where there have been other members of the family where she has said, hey, throw those pants out. Like, no. Don't listen to mom. Keep those pants. Don't throw them out. Do they make you comfortable? Do you like them?
This is
all
like
you do is downgrade where you wear them.
This is like an origin story on like a hoarder's documentary.
Yeah, I've got a little bit of that in me. I just, until something can't be used, it can be used.
I don't think the underwear that are just a waistband can be used though.
It feels like underwear when you put it on.
No, it doesn't.
But the waistband is there. I mean, really doing the job it's supposed to do.
We're going to work on this. Yeah, we got to work on this.
It kind of ends up like a...
No, I get it. Like you don't have to explain it.
It looks like a grass skirt, almost. Like I should be like, you know, hula dancing in it or something.
This is not something...
I have I get my dad's ukulele.
You do understand that this is... beyond odd, right? This is not normal.
I don't care.
Yeah.
I'm going to start caring now.
That's a theme.
Hey.
That's a theme.
I'm going to start caring now. Joe Ostrowski next on The Score.
A daily sports betting show.
We couldn't live without Joe Ostrowski.
Oh, yeah. He's got a lot of Herbert Hoover in him. I got to tell you that much.
Joe Ostrowski, brought to you by Four Seasons, heating, air conditioning, plumbing, and electric. For all the right reasons, call 866 Four Seasons. The host of BetQL Daily and Early Odds on The Score is joining us on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com, twitch.tv/Chicago670 The Score. Joe, how are you?
Good, guys. What's going on?
Well, I think you can tell us what we were debating before that the various cases and or gamblers cases, statistical cases for a 1-1 Bears team to look like it has an opportunity to go somewhere against a team that can't stop the run and just push them around and beat them. And you'd others say, well, wait, here's an 0-2 team that could be riding its own historical trend to victory.
Yeah, you can go back 10 years, you can go back 20 years if you want. Teams that start 0-2, what I'm worried about is against the spread. Now, again, it's one of those situations where you do have an 0-2 team that is favored, and there are a few of those this week. You have an 0-2 team in the Bengals on Monday. They're favored by more than a touchdown. So all of that is baked into the cake. But, yeah, they cover 60% of the time covering that number. Teams in a desperate spot. The Baltimore Ravens, they're a slight favorite against Dallas this weekend, also in that spot. Because we can say, well, when you're 0-2, it's tough. In this playoff format, 5% of the time you're making the playoffs. So as ridiculous as it sounds, it's a gotta have it spot. The other thing that stood out of the first couple of weeks is these big underdogs. Doesn't apply to Bears Colts. They were all covering until last night, until they don't. That's the thing with trends. A lot of people say, well, in this scenario, this happens X amount of times. The old saying in Vegas by a lot of old bookmakers, if you talk to them, ask them about trends, they'll tell you trends don't pay the rent. Because a lot of times people are looking for some sort of an angle and they'll find a trend and they'll just blindly bet it. A lot of times doesn't matter. That was a different coach against different teams, different rules in place. So that, but that 0-2 thing, that's real. Because it's not like you're trying harder, but you're going to get a better effort out of everybody in that building because it's the middle of September and the season is on the line right here. Now, as far as what they're betting in Bears-Colts, they are betting on the Bears so far. So that's moved that number down a little bit. Earlier in the week, it was -2.5. Now we're sitting at the Colts favored by 1. The total has gone down. I've talked to some sharper bettors that say if it goes down a little bit more to a number of 43, it's at 43.5 right now, they would bet the over. What we've seen out of this Colts defense so far, but if the Bears can't move it against this defense, which is missing now their best players with Buckner on IR, they're missing their best cornerback as well. Brent's on IR. Latu has not been practicing this week. If you can't move it against this team, I don't know when it's going to happen.
So, I've been monitoring that line. It started, as you said, at 2.5 and down now to 1, Joe. And is the fear real then that the Bears, like, this is a tell-all game? I mean, we talked about week one being kind of, it's week one, anything can happen. And then week two, it's still been only 2 weeks, but the sample size now starting to get big for some of these teams.
Yeah, and this is certainly the softest defensive matchup the Bears have had, and it's really not close. Maybe people don't realize, but the Titans do actually have a pretty good defense, and that's another 0-2 team, and they happen to be favored against the Green Bay Packers this weekend. But yeah, I do think that's fair, because there was reaction to what happened on Sunday night in a negative sense to the Bears. Caleb Williams was the favorite for Offensive Rookie of the Year the moment he was drafted, all offseason and the first 2 weeks. And after Sunday night, he was removed as the favorite. It is now Marvin Harrison, who's now the favorite. Was Caleb moved down one slot? Nope. He was moved down a couple slots. Jaden Daniels is the second favorite. It's kind of close, but that was notable that Caleb moves down to third. And not far behind him is Malik Nabers, who had 18 targets in his last game for the Giants. Brock Bowers off to a nice start.
He's one of the best tight ends in football. He is unbelievable.
It takes time. That was
obvious. You didn't have to be a good scout to say, yeah, that's a robot.
No, you just watch him play. And
that guy's awesome.
And he's got the Panthers this weekend. So he's probably going to have a pretty good week. Yeah, and over history, it tells us, okay, it takes time for rookie tight ends. Not over the last couple of years, if you look at the top couple of guys. So we saw movement, Offensive Rookie of the Year, down for Caleb, and then down for the Bears. I think I mentioned last week, because of that Jordan Love injury, the Bears going into the Houston game were the second favorite in the division. Now they're the long shot. Now they're 7-1. Minnesota hype is real. They're the second favorite. And Green Bay is the third favorite right now in the division. Detroit, they're about even money for the NFC North.
Would you buy the dip on Caleb Williams?
As far as Offensive Rookie of the Year?
Yeah.
If I may, the number that jumps out to me in of this group of players, what I would buy is Malik Nabers. And you get better value because we see it all the time. The New York bump is real, and these rookie quarterbacks have struggled so much out of the gates. I was originally thinking, and I think we'll get there, probably not with Bo Nix, but with the other two, if they give you the sample size of a full year and those stats, it's not enough of a dip for me.
Okay.
So I would go with Malik Nabers right now, and he's +650. I was a little surprised, though, that Caleb slid that far after after two games. But that's the power of the island game, that we saw on Sunday night.
So looking at those futures, because this fascinates me, we knew there was going to be overreaction after the first week, and now we're 2 weeks in. Is there anything else that you were looking at the beginning of the season, and now you're like, oh, this is now a much better value than what we saw in the offseason coming in?
It's so this NFL-related?
Yes, NFL. Bears?
Okay, so I think one matchup this weekend that is so interesting, because sometimes it's, hey, like with betting, stick to your priors. What you felt all offseason, you're going to change that after two games. But I find it fascinating with what's happening in New Orleans, because whatever metric you want to take a look at, they're elite. Offensively with Clint Kubiak there, and defensively. We're used to that with defense. We just weren't expecting it on the offensive side. Now, part of me wants to pull back and say, nah, you know what? Half of the sample size is against the Carolina Panthers, an absolute dumpster fire. But there's been a big adjustment in Eagles-Saints. If you go back a couple weeks ago, oh, the Eagles are favored on the road. Right now, the Saints are a three-point favorite against the Eagles. Little recency bias because of what happened on Monday night to the Philadelphia Eagles, but I find that to be really interesting. Are you buying into this small sample size of what we've seen in the Saints? You do have to respond to what we're seeing on the field. Like, maybe this could be the buy time for the Saints, and people just don't quite realize. The public is betting on the Saints, but I find that to be really interesting with the league. And I mentioned Tennessee favored by 2.5 over Green Bay. Levis has given away a couple of games. His coach has dressed them down publicly. But the thinking is this is going to be a very different situation. Also, what that line is saying, the BS that's coming out of Green Bay, that's just what it is. It's going to be another Malik Willis game. It's not going to be Jordan Love. They're probably saving him for next week. There was a move on next week with the Vikings and the Packers in favor of Green Bay. Mm. So the betting market is saying Love's not going to play this week. He's going to play next week.
So what are you looking at college football-wise? Where are some values and some entertainment possibilities?
Yeah, sure. So we're going to see Northern Illinois back on the field for the first time since that Notre Dame upset. So what the sharper bettors are doing is they're taking Buffalo. They took them plus 14. Now it's down to 13.5. They're not going to take that number, but 14 being a key number, they bet that. The public is all over Tennessee. They haven't played anybody, but they've been lighting up the scoreboard. They get Oklahoma. That's an interesting matchup. I would lean to the underdog, plus 7 with Oklahoma. Everybody's going to be on Tennessee. Certainly understand why. I think the Heisman conversation, Dan, is pretty interesting right now, because Texas is going to be one of those top teams when it's all said and done. And Ewers goes down, and then during the action last week, Arch Manning goes from 100-1 down to 20-1.
Wow.
Which has me thinking, if you miss three starts and you look terrific now moving to the SEC and your last name is Manning, can you still win the Heisman Trophy? There are a lot of people taking shots on some big prices on Arch Manning to win the whole thing.
Jalen Milroe looks pretty good to me, but
yep,
we shall see.
Yep.
Anything regarding baseball movement as we get closer to the playoffs, World Series possibilities, postseason awards, et cetera, that interests you?
Yeah, as far as the awards, they've been done for a while. And then we see Ohtani again yesterday, just a ridiculous performance. But the MVP and both Cy Youngs, the prices are saying that they've been done. Okay. Now, the rookie of the years are up in the air. The debate on the AL side is Luis Gil or Austin Wells, which guys are going to be, and something that's been debated for months now. On the NL Rookie of the Year side, is it Jackson Merrill or is it Paul Skeens? The pricing is all over the place. You know, if you go back a good month or so, Paul Skeens was minus 5,000 to win this award.
Wow.
It was done. And now Jackson Merrill's the favorite. He's been the favorite for like the last month or so. But they're really close when it comes to the odds. It's Merrill minus 250, Paul Skeens plus 175. A lot of the numbers would say that you would go with Merrill. But I wonder, when it comes down to it, the voters, Skeens, one of the biggest stories. And the assumption was that we're going to shut him down at some point. I do think that they're going to end up voting Skeens, but it's really a toss-up right now between that. A lot of the playoff spots, they've been locked up for quite some time. It's just some of the maneuvering right now. Like the Orioles and Yankees was expected to be a division race to the very end, but now the Yankees are pulling away. They're going to end up taking that one. Not many division races here, but some of the wild card action. I think on the National League side, there are some dangerous teams in the NL West, like the Padres with a terrific bullpen that could do something. And we know what the D-backs did last year, and they're playing some good ball. So that's another team to look out for.
Joe Ostrowski, thank you as always, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, guys. Have a great weekend. Sunday morning, by the way, BetMGM game day, the first couple hours right here on 670 The Score. I'm with Jason Lacafora and Kate Constable. You can catch 7 to 9 a.m. on Sunday mornings.
Cool stuff. That is Joe Ostrowski. And when we come back, man, when the message got into our group chat yesterday about what Shohei Ohtani was doing, I thought the game had ended.
I thought the game was over. I sent the message. I thought the game was over.
Okay, like, you sent it, and I believe I just said, holy bleep.
Right. And and we were all kind of in the same, like, I can't believe this guy. He's so good, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, wait, guys. He went back to the plate again and hit another home run.
He's not just doing that. There's so much more to what's happening. And Craig Counsell with some strong thoughts about how he thinks the Cubs should be built. We're going to hit all that next on The Score.
Bernstein and Holmes, middays 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com in Odyssey Station.
Your one pitch, Ohtani sends one in the air, deep right field. He's in a world of his own. On a 1-2, Ohtani sends one in the air, the other way, back it goes, gone! One of a kind player, one of a kind season. Shohei Ohtani starts the 50-50 club.
Certainly smiling. We all are watching this guy.
Oh my gosh! Shohei Ohtani! The greatest day in baseball history! This is not real life. He is not human.
Sportsnet LA. I'm not the biggest fan of Joe Davis, but that stuff's great. That was great.
Definitely met the moment. And
yes.
Can you imagine if you were... Did you see the kid had the sign, like, I missed math for this?
Oh, you got plenty of math yesterday.
Yeah,
you
got to add up all those RBIs, the home runs, the stolen bases, the 50 plus 50. Like, what? 50-50 is insane.
Come on. Like, 20 is good. 50 and 50, and it isn't just that. It isn't just that. When I read the way when you hear jaded old baseball guys,
they're definitely jaded.
Old baseball, the BBWA guys who are just like, okay, fine, he's the greatest I've ever seen.
Yeah,
you know, you get crusty baseball managers saying this is the best player I have ever seen, and he's not even pitching yet.
You know, I feel bad for in this moment. Mike Trout got to play with that guy, and they couldn't get any traction.
I feel bad for Mike Trout because his body is defying him.
Yeah,
because Mike Trout,
he's already a Hall of Famer though. So
easily a Hall of Famer, and at his peak, the best baseball player who ever lived.
Exactly.
And now Shohei Ohtani, because every year baseball players get better, Shohei Ohtani is the best baseball player.
It's an eclipse moment.
I sometimes you just run out of things to say, and he's had arguably, this is how Joe Sheehan broke it down. Ohtani has had greater games. Days on which he struck out 10 men while hitting two homers.
Exactly.
Or threw 7 shutout innings and then helped key the game-winning rally in the 8th. So he mentions that. But what he looks at here that I love is the line in the box score. Those of us who grew up reading box scores.
Old school.
At-bats, runs, hits, and it says B-I. It's A-B-R-H-B-I. 6-4-6-10. Okay? 6-4-6-10. We've never seen it before. We've seen 6'3", 6'12". We've seen 6'4", 5'10". We've seen 6'5", 6'10". But across the sweep of recorded baseball history, never a 6'4", 6'10". And what Joe Sheehan says, this is something you sit with quietly. It is a baseball Renoir. It is a Rembrandt. 6'4", 6'10" exists on a plane apart from our measurement tools. Something not to be graded or ranked, but to be stared at in a quiet room from 6 feet away, appreciated like a sculpture or photograph or, yes, a painting. It is baseball art crafted by the greatest artist of his time.
It's when you go to like a Hall of Fame, right? And it kind of washes over you the different things that you see that remind you of the feats that have been done. I don't know what they're going to use from this specific game, but there will be something because the amount of things that happen, whether it's the 50-50, the actual stats, the box scores you just said, but it is like art. It is art. It's not just numbers because a lot of times we boil it down to the back of a baseball card, but it's more than that for those of us who witness it, know where we are. No, you'll know 10 years from now. I remember when I got that notification in the group chat about what was going on and what was happening, right? There's just certain moments. Like you can go back to Kerry Wood's strikeouts, right? Mm-hmm. You can go back to Barry Bonds. I remember where I was when they said, oh yeah, bases loaded, we're going to walk you because we don't have time for this. Like there are certain things that happen that you just remember. I was talking before the show, Bo Jackson in the All-Star game. The big leadoff home run, going back to back, I believe it was Wade Boggs he went back to back with in the All-Star game. There's just certain moments that you remember and that stick with you for a lifetime. This is certainly one of them. And if you were in that building for that, my goodness.
You mentioned that they didn't walk him. And Skip Schumacher, who is one of those crusty old baseball guys, and maybe the next manager of the Chicago White Sox, said this afterward about
I think that's
choice.
A bad move, baseball-wise, karma-wise, baseball god-wise. You go after him and see if you can get him out. And I think out of respect for the game, we're going to go after him. He hit the home run. I mean, you know, that's just part of the deal. He's hit 50 of them. He's the most talented player I've ever seen. He is doing things that I've never seen done before in the game. And if he has a couple more of these peak years, he might be the best ever to play the game.
Well, it's possible he's already that without whatever the statistical case may be. You know, when we're thinking about stats and baseball art, have you ever looked around at the Addison Brown Line stop, the Addison L stop near Addison and Lincoln and Ravenswood?
Probably, but not enough.
They have, it's called the encrypted inning, and they use Ron Santo's handwriting on his scorecard from the May 14th, 1969 game between the Cubs and Padres, and they recreate some box score symbols in bronze. They're there. They're at the Addison L stop up on the wall.
That's kind of cool.
Oh, it's super cool. But there is actual baseball scorecard, literal art in Chicago that's there for you to see.
And the one thing that washes over me every time I look at the Ohtani numbers for the season, everything else, when you just look at like how good he's been before this season, right? And then you look at this season and you realize he's recovering from Tommy John surgery. Here's what's going to happen. If he doesn't replicate this again, you're going to wonder, what if he never pitched? How good would his seasons have been? Because this is the example of that.
Maybe the answer is it doesn't matter.
Maybe
pitching doesn't but you're right. To have this great an offensive season and also happen to not be pitching, I think you're right. It's fair that the question gets asked that is this greatness in part made possible by the fact that he didn't pitch? Now, in addition to everything else, did you know that this is from Sheehan, Ohtani is posting one of the most efficient volume base stealing seasons of all time?
Yeah, 51, four caught stealings, right?
It is the best stolen base percentage in a 50-steal season. The best was Max Carey of Pittsburgh in 1922 at 96.2%. The next was Jacoby Ellsbury in 2013. He had four caught stealings in 52 and 52 steals, 92-9. Then Shohei Ohtani this year.
It's insane. Amazing.
We also had a little news yesterday, at least I thought, when Craig Counsell was talking about how to construct a winning team, as he was complimenting what the Brewers have done and accepting the gap between the teams. Tell me if you've maybe heard a little something like this before, when maybe we were talking about Matt Chapman the other day.
I mean, we've got to get better, man. Like, the team we're chasing is 10 games ahead of us. You got to get better. And we should try to be building 90-win teams here. I mean, you know, like, that's like what you have to do to, you know, that's a playoff standard. I mean, that's what you got to get to be safely in the playoffs, right? And safely in the tournament. So from that perspective, you know, we got a ways to go.
Now, we're going to play this again. But when he says, Ray, just please reload that. When he says we got to get better, man, I want you to replace the word man with the word Jed. And listen to it again.
I mean, we've got to get better, man. Like, the team we're chasing is 10 games ahead of us. You got to get better. And we should try to be building 90-win teams here. I mean, you know, like, that's like what you have to do to, you know, that's a playoff standard. I mean, that's what you got to get to be safely in the playoffs, right? And safely in the tournament. So from that perspective, you know, we got a ways to go.
That's one to save, Ray. That is one to save.
For the big free agent bonanzas in the offseason?
Sounds to me like that message is intended for somebody.
Well, it's also very, very clear, very loud, very demonstrative without being, like, over the top.
And right!
Well, when does that ever matter?
It's right!
When does that ever matter?
Craig Counsell just defined his entire tenure right here. Right now.
You think
so? He just set the standard. And whatever happens with his career and with this team, with him as manager, we're always going to go back to this.
And he's part of it. He's part of getting the most wins above replacement out of his players by putting them in positions to succeed.
90 is the bar. That's what I heard. 90 mm-hmm. is the minimum bar.
I mean, we've got to get better, man. Like,
yep. Simple and absolutely 100% true. You are listening to a Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electric Football Friday, presented by your local Ford dealers and IDOT, It's Not a Game, Illinois.com. Marshall Harris is alongside today, and Kevin Fishbane awaits us next on a shortened show today before Cubs baseball. Bernstein and Holmes on the score.